The following is a presentation of the Dirt Track Channel.
Well, hi there, everybody. I'm Sean Wood, and welcome to the Sprint Car Show for Tuesday, February the 11th. On today's broadcast, we'll talk with Lucas Wolf, the new driver for the John and Pee Wee Zamaitis 410 Sprint Car Team. Steve Sinclair, the president of the Bumper to Bumper IRA Sprint Cars, will stop by to talk about the 2014 season, and we'll catch up with eight-time URC champion Kurt Michael. That's all coming up next year on the Sprint Car Show, brought to you by Penske Racing Shocks, the competitive advantage of champions, by Coastal181.com, Reading for Racers, and by the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum, located outside of Turn 2 at the famed Knoxville Raceway. Just in time for spring, motorsports publisher Coastal181 will deliver another great open-wheel book titled The People's Champ, A Racing Life. This autobiography of USAC Triple Crown champion Dave Darlin looks at his racing career from quarter midgets to sprint cars. The People's Champ is sure to be a hit with open-wheel fans about one of the sport's true class acts. To learn more, visit Coastal181.com or call them toll-free at 877-907-8181. Coastal 181, Reading for Racers. And welcome back to the Sprint Car Show here on the DirtTrackChannel.com. We bring back a gentleman who's been on a few times already, mainly because he's been doing quite well for himself back in his days with the World of Outlaws, finally picking up that elusive first-ever World of Outlaws victory. And now he has a new ride back home here in Pennsylvania. And we're talking with second-generation driver Lucas Wolf out of Mechanicsburg. Hi, Lucas. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Sure thing. You and I ran into each other at the PRI trade show in Indianapolis, and you weren't sure what was happening at the time. Where were you in terms of trying to find a ride, and how did the John and Pee Wee Zamaitis ride come about for you?
It was a bit of a, difficult off season. I think a lot of people are faced with similar issues right now. It's opportunities are kind of short, and it's hard to get anything going. We were pursuing trying to get back racing, preferably on the road with the Jim and Laura Alabot car, and kind of searching for some way to do something with that. And we weren't really able to get anything serious going. Struggling like most, and then there was a bit of a shakeup back here kind of late in the off season, which is certainly unusual, and was able to get myself in a pretty historic and a good ride here in Pennsylvania.
So what is the plans for you and the Zemco number one team this year?
We're going to hit a lot of the better races around home. We're working pretty hard right now trying to get down to Volusia next week, which I think we'll be able to get accomplished. But we have a lot of time trial races, the outlaw races, all-star races, and all the big local races scheduled to run this year. So looking forward to getting back to some of those, a lot of those tracks I haven't been to in the last few years. So it's always good to have an opportunity to race at them again. And, looking forward to an exciting year.
So are you guys primarily throughout the eastern part of the country, or will you be heading out and also competing at the Knoxville Nationals?
I think a lot of it has to do with how we're doing. If we get running well and we're able to be successful right away, which we're all certainly hoping for, we'll be able to kind of tailor a schedule around that. But we'll be virtually all in the eastern part of the country and the region. We're planning on doing Knoxville, but it would be the bigger races around here. There's a lot of stuff to choose from, not too far away. So we're going to kind of take it as it goes a bit.
So basically, John and Pee Wee are looking to sort of keep the schedule that they had been working on over the past several years with the bigger pain shows and the time trial shows then?
They'll all be pretty much all be time trial shows. They've kind of done that the last few years, and it's worked well for them, and it's successful. It makes a lot of sense for everybody involved, especially the car owner, to try to run those types of races, and they're good for the driver as well. So we'll follow a very similar schedule to what they have the last few years.
For a person like yourself who was trying to get back and run once again in 2014 with the World of Outlaws, and have this opportunity. As you mentioned, a very historic card. Matter of fact, looking at some of the old pictures just a little while ago of some of the different drivers and some of the talented drivers that have piloted the Zemco number one machine, is it a tough thing to know what you want, but also at the same time not pass up a tremendous opportunity to go run with John and Pee-wee Zemaitis?
You know, I was pretty much working on the premise of what I, the best thing that I had available to me, which you certainly always try to do. And we were, that's the path we were going. When this became available, it was clear that this was certainly by far the best opportunity I'd have. And it is it's a very competitive car. They've been very successful, and they've the list of drivers they had are all very accomplished guys. And it's a car that that runs well, and hopefully I'll be able to continue along that direction.
Does that put any added pressure on a driver coming into a car that has such a storied past to perform as well as you can, knowing that maybe somewhat unfairly you might be judged on your success based on the past drivers that have piloted that car?
Yeah, I mean, I think certainly the when you go to an established team that's won a lot of races for a long time, there's always a lot of definitely a lot of emphasis on running well. But as far as pressure or not, I mean, that really doesn't play a huge factor in anything, because there's a lot of pressure every time you race one of these cars. There's a lot of it requires a lot of focus, a lot of hard work, and a lot of things going right to run well. It's just when you go to an established team, they know all those things. They are experienced in that, and they're able to provide you with one of the best opportunities you're going to get when you end up in a team like this.
One of your other dreams I know we've talked about and written about is potentially a shot at the Indy 500 someday and doing some open wheel racing. Is that dream still alive?
Well, I mean, as long as you want to do it, you can. Unfortunately, that's extremely expensive, and it takes a lot of time and dedication to learn that style of racing. I can't really say, you know, whether it's anything more than that or not. It's just one of the things you have to keep working at. So as a driver in modern day, you have to pretty much be working on something all the time, trying to improve in whatever program you're going. But certainly for this year, excited for the opportunity to run with the Zemco team, and looking forward to that.
And personally for yourself, what are your expectations for the 2014 season?
Well, you know, we've got to be successful. We have to run well. We want to win a lot of races. That's the point of doing all this. We've got a good start on everything now. We've been working pretty close the last few days since we got together, and I think things are looking well. So I'm definitely looking forward to a good year, a successful year, and in a lot of ways a challenging year. It's good to come back and race a little bit of some places I haven't been in a while. So those types of things are going to be all good things for this year, and we're going to do the best we can.
Well, Lucas, it's great that you're back here in Pennsylvania and piloting one of the more storied race cars around. Just wondering, how quickly did this deal come about? And when you sat down and signed the deal, what was that experience like for you to be the new pilot for John and Pee-wee Zemaitis?
Well, it was definitely good. We've raced together for the better part of my whole career, so we've always known those guys. We've used a lot of their products and dealt with them quite a bit, so we have a pretty good familiarity with them. And certainly the time frame at the beginning of the year coming soon, it actually moved pretty quick. But they had a few needs that, as far as their team goes, they had a little bit of a personnel shift over the off season. And we're looking for a few things that fortunately I was able to provide, and we were able to kind of come to a deal pretty quick, which was, it's always good to get things, get that kind of stuff handled right away and get on with the stuff that you enjoy the most.
I do want to go back to the Outlaw thing just for one second here. You had mentioned that you were out at PRI, and the course sponsorships are the biggest thing that all the racers find today. Was it a difficult find at the present time this year compared to last year, or was it just one of those years where people maybe just not cutting back, but they're sort of staying the course, and they're not looking to take on anything extra right now in terms of sponsoring additional cars. What was your thoughts and feels as to how the sponsorship hunt was going for you had you been able to get enough to go back onto the World Outlaw scene again?
Well, the difficult thing as far as finding any kind of support is certainly not ever getting any easier. I can't say it's tougher this year than in previous years. It's just always difficult. But I can't say that it was different, of the recent times. I think that's obviously been a trend over the last 5+ years. A lot of car owners are kind of making an exit, which is the biggest problem as a driver goes. When I started racing locally, there was probably as many as 10 or 12 guys that folded for the most part, a full-time car that ran a lot of the races, a lot of the bigger races, as well as weekly races. And as time went on, they reduced their schedules, ran a little less. And unfortunately, now a lot of them have even gone to the point of being no longer competing. So that's the biggest struggle right now, that you have just not as many opportunities to go. So I guess it's like anything that goes through cycles. Sometimes it's up and sometimes it's down. So now is just certainly a very difficult time, so which makes it me all more appreciative that I was able to find a deal.
Well, Lucas, you mentioned earlier that you guys are thrashing to get down to Florida, and already rain is playing havoc with early races down there. And, of course, as we know, Mother Nature throwing more snow at us next week. So right now, no one really knows when any of the openers are going to be, but any kind of a timetable that you guys might have for your first appearance with the car here in central Pennsylvania?
I expect this to come back and get going pretty quickly. I don't know exactly what the schedule is as we move forward throughout the year. We're still kind of finalizing all that. It's been the focus has certainly been on Florida, but I expect to be at a couple of the local track openers, and then as the season wears on, we'll be at more.
Well, it sounds good, and again, welcome back to Pennsylvania, and it's always a pleasure to speak with you. We wish you and the John and Pee-wee's and Myers team all the best of luck for a successful and safe 2014 racing season.
Thank you.
Lucas Wolf, the new pilot for the Zemco number 1 410 Sprint Car here in central Pennsylvania, joining us here on the Sprint Car Show. We will take a break, and when we come back, we'll talk with Steve Sinclair, the president of the Bumper to Bumper IRA Sprints. You're listening to the Sprint Car Show on the DirtTrackChannel.com.
The National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum in Knoxville, Iowa is the only sprint car museum in the world dedicated to promoting the future of sprint car racing and preserving the past. Located in Turn 2 of the world-famous Knoxville Raceway, the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum is open 7 days a week, year-round, except New Year's Day, Easter, Thanksgiving Day, and Christmas Day. Non-wing sprint cars, historic big cars, open-wheel roadsters, and wing sprinters are all on display in the museum, which also features a movie theater and the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame. Make plans now to stop by the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum the next time you're in Knoxville, Iowa, or shop our museum store online at www.sprintcarstuff.com. The Hall of Fame and Museum is open from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Central Time Monday through Friday, and from noon to 5 p.m. Central Time on Saturdays and Sundays.
Welcome back to the Sprint Car Show here on the DirtTrackChannel.com. We head back out to one of my old stomping grounds in our early days of doing the live streaming audio podcast, and we head to Wisconsin and talk with Steve Sinclair, the president of the Bumper to Bumper Interstate Racing Association, as the IRA 410 Sprint Cars based in Wisconsin will kick off another year as they go back to 1966 for sprint car racing, and they'll open up at the Oshkosh Speed Zone Raceway on April the 19th. Steve, it's a great pleasure to talk with you. Welcome to the show.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
Well, we're just chit-chatting a little bit here before we came on the air. We're both ready to see robins and springtime and grass coming up through the snow. As you get forward to looking to another year of sprint car racing, you've been with the organization now as president since 1994. You started out with them in 1993, but you've been with them through crewing for other teams. What's it been like in the state of Wisconsin where a lot of people, no disrespect meant, know a lot about the Badger midgets, and midget racing is very big and popular in the state. Steve, how would you say that midget fans and midget racing out in the Midwest has embraced the winged warriors of the IRA sprint cars?
I don't know that they totally have yet. I think we've created our own fans. You know, Sun Prairie's kind of in Madison, which is, you know, it's kind of off to its own. A lot of the dirt tracks, the Wilmots, the Beaver Dams, Plymouth, Wisconsin, et cetera, are to the east of there. So we've got kind of our own fan base. I think, I'm sure you're going to allude to this shortly, but, you know, we're going to be racing at Angel Park this year, and that'll be a big test to see if the longtime midget fans support.
Yeah, it's the first time you're telling me since 1985 that the IRA sprint cars will be at Angel Park Speedway on June the 1st and July 20th, part of your 30 race dates for 2014 at 15 tracks. How much are you looking forward to getting back to Angel Park?
I was actually there as a fan for those previous shows, and I can't wait. I think it's going to be a big deal, especially the first time. We'll be racing with the midgets, so I mean, you'll have both fan bases, and hopefully we convert some of the longtime midget folks. I like watching midget races. I hope they like watching sprint car races. So, but it's going to be a big deal. They've got a loyal fan base there. I know that it's not a long drive for most of the sprint car fans, so I think we'll have both groups there. Place has a ton of history, and I'm really excited. Plus, Bumper to Bumper is they're a big sponsor of ours, and they've got a big presence in Madison, which is just basically 20 minutes down the road from Sun Prairie.
That is true. Might we see some sprint cars downtown in Madison that day with Bumper to Bumper? Any kind of special opportunities happening for that?
Well, I guess you just put an idea in my head. we're racing Wilmot. No, pardon me. We're coming from Cedar Lake on that first one. So I kind of doubt it that mm-hmm. day. That's a good idea, though. I gotta work on that. We gotta make something happen there. But we're coming out of Cedar Lake, which is probably that's 4 hours to the north, I would say.
Okay.
So it'll, I guess it all depends how that works. But I think we definitely need to have a presence in town and let them know that. There's something a little different happening in Angel Park that night.
Well, we'll stop the podcast for a second. You grab a piece of paper and
I'm already on it.
There you go. I always thought that that's something. It doesn't matter what division you are, whether it's midgets, sprints, late models, Northeast Dirt Modifieds. I always thought that what we are missing these days in this current quote unquote me generation is there's so much going on. That there's nothing wrong with either A, putting a race car out on display at a local dealership and or local store for Bumper to Bumper, or have them at the track a little earlier and maybe for that particular evening, if it's $25 to get in for the pit gate, pay the $25 for the driver to thank him for coming out early to get a car on this way. I think that's something that racing is missing in not getting back to the fans, because I don't know about you guys, but I see here in central Pennsylvania, as soon as the races are over, the rigs are locked up and people are off and ready to get out of the pits. There are some, don't get me wrong, there are some that will stay around, sign autographs, leave the car out, let the kiddies see what these beasts are like. But I just think that we're missing that aspect in racing. And you've been around a long time. You're telling me your dad was an engine builder. What do you think?
No, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. And part of our deal is with Bumper to Bumper is that we are supposed to, and I try to make every team participate at some point in time during the season. They're our biggest point fund sponsor. I think the least they can do is spend a couple hours at a store at some point in time during the season. So we try to get everybody to do at least one appearance at a store, whether or at a track, at a location near a track. But I agree with you. And the leaving early, I get it. Sometimes it's a late night and we're traveling to get there. But I think in our case, fortunately, we've got, no matter where we go, if we go to Beaver Dam, there's five or six guys from that town. If we go to Wilmot, there's five or six guys from the Kenosha area. Getting some to stay is not a problem. And mm-hmm. I also help out at the Wilmot track in addition to my IRA stuff when I'm available. And opening night at Wilmot this year, we're going to do an appearance. We're actually going to do tech. with all the divisions. The morning of our opener, you know, for the ones that haven't had it done earlier, we're going to try and do a car show in the town of Antioch, which is about 15 minutes from Wilmot. And so it's like a car show in a little mall parking lot.
Okay.
And then we have a police escort taking us from the parking lot there at about 2 o'clock when pits open at 3:00, so probably about 2 o'clock or so, we actually have a police escort through the town of Antioch, you know, to the Wisconsin border, and then off to Wilmot we go. So I think that's kind of a neat thing, and the same concept of what you're talking about, you know, trying to get some fans interested, and what better day to do it than opening day.
So now we're talking race cars driving through the streets with a police escort then?
Well, they probably wouldn't be driving. They'd probably be in trailers.
But
in other divisions, a lot of the trailers are open trailers, so you'll get to see the cars. But, I mean, the car show in town, hopefully people will go to that. But if not, they'll see this parade of rigs going down the road, and hopefully that gets some attention and creates some new fans.
Bill Balog was your champion from last year. Tell me a little bit about 2013. What kind of car counts were you guys averaging last year?
IRA's been blessed for as long as I've been doing this. I think we averaged 29.5 cars over our, I think we got 26 events in last year, I believe. So we're pretty good, and I think that's actually going up. There's a 360 group by us, and they run, it's not an ASCS route, engine rule. It's a little more limited, but there's some pretty good racers in that group. And the last few years, I've worked really hard to try and get some of these guys to move up to the 410 ranks and show them the benefits of being a 410. We're finally succeeding in doing so. The last 3 years, guys have moved up, and this year we're picking up their two biggest dogs. And one team, Ben Schmidt, who's a former MSA 360 champ, has already got 3 410s in his arsenal, and they're well-financed, and I think that'll be a great addition. And, I'm pretty happy. I'm looking, I'd say most of our shows are four heat nights, We have a few 3 heat nights, but down here in the southern part of the state where most of the guys are at, our car counts are really strong. We may travel, up to Superior, which is, 7 hours to our north, and only drag 24, 25. But down here, we're more than solid. We're in the 30s down here.
7 hours to get up to Superior. Wow. I didn't.
Oh, yeah. We go to Superior's a 7-hour tow.
Mm-hmm.
Ashland's about that. And Cedar Lake, from where I live, I live on just on the Illinois side of the Wisconsin border between Milwaukee and Chicago. Cedar Lake's even 6.5 for me.
Wow. You look at it, and Milwaukee or Wisconsin doesn't seem that big of a state, but then you start thinking about it, and I could see those long trips, and if you're doing a one-day deal, that does make for a long day, but hey, it's racing, it's worth it.
No, we try and tie, most of those longer trips in with, another event to make it somewhat worth it. But, yeah, you get northern part of the state, you drive through several hours of pines.
Oh, geez.
for a long time before you get to the racetrack. But it's pretty up there, and I think the guys, for the most part, enjoy going up.
So 30 races this year, Steve, 15 tracks. Is that on par for what you guys have been having?
Yeah, that's pretty standard. We've cut the travel way down. I mean, I think I did a thing at our banquet here. I did a little tally since I've been president. We've been to 58 different tracks in 8 states in my, since 1994. And in reality has it, as long as tracks in our area are willing to book us, I think it's helping the car count in regards to guys that are doing the whole schedule. We never had a car count problem, but let's say the first time Janet Holbrook promoted a race at Attica, it was an IRA All-Star show.
Mm-hmm.
There were 72 cars there.
Oh.
So you take, I think we dragged 20 guys out there, and maybe, 7 or 8, made money. The rest of them, didn't. And it doesn't necessarily always pay. It maybe it paid extra for them, the top guys to go out there, but to get the rest of them to go and follow you, they got to make money too. And while I think that's a neat deal, and I'd still like to do that again sometime, I think by keeping this thing a little closer to home, was definitely the right move, especially with the economy the way it is and fuel costs. And I can take that a step further. Knoxville's probably the closest, 410 track to us. And, back in the day on a Friday or Sunday, if we ran, Terry McCarl or Brooke Tatnell or Linton Jeffrey or a bunch of guys would show up and do this.
Mm-hmm.
Even those guys don't do it anymore because the cost, the travel factor, you know, unless you're running in the top three, you know, it hardly pays for those guys to make a, you know, or you know, to make a 5-hour drive. Or, and the same holds true with my guys going to an Attica or Knoxville. You know, we raced at Knoxville for years, did an IRA Knoxville challenge, and got away from it last year for the first time. And it's not that we don't want to do it. I just think from as a group standpoint, there's not enough of the guys that are, you know, benefiting from it financially to make you want to do it anymore.
Now, is that something that if the economy were to turn around completely and things got a lot better in the next couple of years, could you see yourself going back and doing that IRA Knoxville challenge? Or is it one of those ones that once it stops, it's almost much more difficult to start up again?
No, in the Knoxville sense, I think we could start that thing up again in a heartbeat. I think we have an outstanding relationship with the folks at Knoxville. And, I think that could happen again. You know, I mean, last year, I mean, Knoxville and the World of Outlaw changed mufflers and some little things like that, and we didn't make that change to try and save our team's money. And Attica and Fremont and some of the PA tracks, I think, did the same. They stayed with what they had. And, you know, I just, you know, over time, I think more and more guys will get those mufflers because they're running Outlaw shows or whatever, but you just didn't want to put that extra, okay, guys, here we're going out there again. Here's another $150 expense.
Yep.
You know, it doesn't sound like a lot, but, you know, if you're a good team, you're going to get a couple sets, you know, and I got new headers, and it just adds up. So I would love to go back to Knoxville as a group sometime, and I think I'm sure we will. I'm sure we will.
And speaking of the economy, how did you guys survive through the economic downturn and now on the road to the economic recovery in terms of car counts?
I'd say we've maintained pretty well. We're blessed with a pretty big core. So if you're a 410 racer around here, you don't really have a lot of choice. You got to race. You're going to race IRA. There's really nowhere else to go. You can Wilmot runs some unsanctioned events, but that's part of my involvement at Wilmot. I've kind of arranged it so there's never a conflict.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, we need their top guys, and they need some of our guys to put on a show when they have one. So it works out okay. But if you're going to run, you know, to the east of me, you'd have to go to Butler. To the west of me, you got to go to Knoxville. And to the south of me, you can go down to a Mawa show. But by the time you make that, you know, that travel, it doesn't, you know, you're better off just racing with us. We pay better than some of those deals anyway. Not Knoxville, but the rest of them. Mm-hmm. So why would you want to leave? So our car count's good. So we got a big core to draw from. And maybe there's not as many guys doing the whole thing, but I think my, you know, per event car count is pretty close to what it's been. I think, you know, we were averaging, you know, 31 a couple of years ago. We dropped to 29.5 last year, but I'm not aware of losing anybody, and I think we're picking up a few. So you know, I'm feeling better about 2014 than I have in a long time.
And it's funny you say that, because I was just going to ask you, how are you feeling about 2014, and what do you pay to win a regular show?
The two win varies. It's never less than 2,200, but I'd say half our schedule pays more. You know, there's several 25s, there's several threes, there's a four. I think there was even one that paid 7,200 to win with some lap money attached to it last year. So, it you know, the two win varies. The rest of it's pretty standard. However, when we do go up north, if we're traveling, you know, let's say 4 hours or more, the start money goes up. So around here, it's basically 2,200 to win, 250 to start. So it's like for 22 cars, it's 13,200, you know, plus a sanction fee. When we go north, we bump, you know, typically those are 25 or more to win and 300 to start. So it's, you know, you're adding about $1,000 to the pay when we go a greater distance. And some pay more anyway. You know, for example, we go to Cedar Lake at the end of the year, and it's for the Jerry Richard Memorial. And, you know, that's like a $5,000 to win show, and there's bonuses all the way back. So everybody's making some decent money that night.
And
so we've got a minimum, which is, you'll find that at the Beaver Dams and some of the Wilmots and Plymouth that are right in our backyard. You know, that's the 2,200 to win, 250 to start deal. But, you know, again, that's only half the schedule. And some of those tracks have specials too, so there's certain nights that it's increased, but that's the minimum.
And of the 15 tracks you go to, is there any one real hotbed where they really, really enjoy seeing the 410 sprint cars come in?
Well, I think the bulk of our schedule is repetitive.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think they're all making money on us, so they wouldn't have us back. I think there's only, you know, one track that was on the schedule last year we're not going to, and it's more of a schedule issue than it was the fact that, you know, we didn't want to go or they didn't want to have us. You know, and we've added Sun Prairie this year, and we're going back to Seymour, Wisconsin, which is near Green Bay, which we haven't been to in a few years. And that's a good market. You know, we need to be in that Green Bay market.
Well, Steve, sounds like things are going quite well for the Bumper to Bumper IRA Sprint Cars, and we want to thank you so much for taking time out and joining us here on the Sprint Car Show. Wish you guys all the best of luck and have a safe season here in 2014, which kicks off again at Oshkosh Speed Zone Raceway on April the 19th.
I greatly appreciate it, and I'm glad to be on and get to an audience that out east that maybe doesn't know that much about us, so I appreciate it.
Steve, thanks so much, and we will talk to you again in the future.
Thank you very much.
Steve Sinclair, the president of the Bumper Interstate Racing Association, joining us here on the Sprint Car Show. We will take a break and be back with more right after this.
The world leader in suspension technology, Penske Racing Shocks has been providing custom-built, high-performance shock absorbers to all forms of racing for over 20 years. Offering only the highest quality suspension products, shocks are available in non, single, double, triple, and four-way adjustable configurations. All Penske Racing Shocks are hand-built, tailored to meet a driver's feel or car setup, and dyno-tested, ensuring the highest attention is paid to detail, consistency, and performance. For your short track needs, contact Dave Reedy at Penske Shocks at 610-375-6180. That's 610-375-6180. Penske Racing Shocks are available direct from the manufacturer or through many dealers worldwide. Visit them on the web at www.penskeshocks.com. Penske Racing Shocks, the competitive advantage of champions.
And welcome back to the Sprint Car Show here on the DirtTrackChannel.com. And we take a little trip down the eastern seaboard to Ocean View, Delaware, about 7 miles north of Ocean City, Maryland. And we talk with the 8-time United Racing Company Sprint Car Champion, Kurt Michael. Kurt, always a pleasure. Good to talk with you here on the Sprint Car Show.
Yes, same to you. Thanks for having me.
I love the beach, and having spent a lot of time as a kid in Point Pleasant Beach, I'm sure you enjoy the beach area down there, but I guess it does make for a bit of a commute on a Friday or a Saturday or even going back to Delaware on race weekend. What was that like to get acclimated to it all those years ago, and how acclimated are you now all these years later to living in Delaware and racing all over the country?
Oh, I'm used to it by now. We moved down after I graduated high school. And that was 1990, and I was driving back and forth to Linda Speedway. We won the championship there in 93, so I got pretty used to making the trip. The Grove's about 4 hours.
Tell me a little bit, 1995, you first started out racing with the United Racing Company, and now you hold the record for not only consecutive championships at 5, but you also hold the overall record for 8. How did you get to Linda Speedway, and what was your racing path like as a kid to get to where you are today?
Well, I started out in quarter midgets, and then I stopped racing quarter midgets so my brother Chris could start racing modified. We all went to the modified races at Nazareth Speedway as a family, and then my brother Sean got a micro, and when I was old enough to race a micro, well, and we moved down to Delaware, and that's kind of when I started racing the micro. So I just went micro to sprint car.
What about the modifieds and growing up at Nazareth? Was there any thoughts in going to the modifieds first?
No, none whatsoever.
Hmm. And why was that?
I don't know. I guess because we were hanging around the micro and got used to the open wheel type deal instead of the big body and all that stuff. Just kind of stayed with the open wheel stuff.
Speaking of Nazareth, one of the legendary tracks here in Pennsylvania, what were some of your fondest memories of watching your brother Chris run the modified there?
Oh, there was a bunch of them, but he never was able to win a race, but he almost won one, and actually Doug Hoffman, got him on the like last lap, I think, and my brother Sean was helping Doug at the time, so it made for a little bit tense moments there in the family, but it all worked out. Everybody got along.
Obviously, they were not sitting too close to each other at Thanksgiving dinner then, were they, that year?
Yeah, it was all right. It was just depressing because Chris, you know, was close to getting that one win.
And so how long did Chris race for?
Oh, he started when he was 16, and I don't know exactly how long he raced for, to tell you the truth. Maybe 3-4 years.
Okay. And your brother Sean, what's he doing these days?
He is on the Outlaw Tour helping Sammy Swindell.
Pretty impressive.
Yeah.
And 2014, what year will this be now for you racing?
Oh, I started in a micro in 92. So what's that?
Let's see, 92, 02, 12, there's 20 years right there, 23 years.
Yeah,
give
that's
or take
what it
20,
to me.
23 seasons, wow.
Yeah.
As you
pretty
look,
long.
Yeah. As you look back on what you've accomplished in URC, I understand when you guys first started out, it wasn't about any kind of records or wins. You guys were just wanting to make it to the very next race. What was the early days like when you finally jumped onto the full-time roster with URC?
Well, it was Dad and I, you know, running one race car out of here in Ocean View, Delaware, and we sold all the micro stuff, and Dad said, look, we'll get a sprint car, and we'll own it for no more than 5 years. If you can't get a ride, that's it. We're done. So my deal was to race his car as long as I could and hopefully get a ride. And I had to make sure that the car came back every week because that's the only way I could keep racing. If I wadded the thing up, I'd be sitting, and that wouldn't help me whatsoever.
And what were those early days like with the competition that you had back then, and what did you learn from guys like Glenn Fitzcharles and even at the end of his career, a guy like Dave Kelly?
Now, Dave, I never got to run with Dave. He was already gone 410 racing by the time I came in. But
okay.
Fitzy, he was on the top when I came in Kramer. And I just learned to race smooth. And not my biggest thing was not to get in too many people's way, trying not to get labeled, you know, as a Yahoo and stuff like that, and just gain their respect. So I watched what they did and how they raced and talked to them as much as I could, and they really helped me out.
What do you think about the younger kids coming up in racing today? Where do you see them being labeled as in terms of the differences between how they are coming to a track and approaching the races compared to what you learned from some of the best in the business?
Oh, I don't know. It's hard to say because I guess I'm kind of the old guy now, but looking at it, it seems like there's a lot of kids that come in and they have already the best of everything, and they hire the best crew chief and this and that, and their learning curve's a whole lot different than what my learning curve and a lot of other people that got started in this a few years ago, their learning curve was too.
Yeah, things have definitely changed over the years, but unfortunately, as you mentioned just a moment ago, you learned from one of the greats and elite, Kramer Williamson, a rough year not only for URC with the passing of both Kramer and Mitch Miller, but your wife, Jennifer, a former Miss Motorsports, battling breast cancer. You only ran a couple races. How difficult was last year from you, and how tough was it to see two greats in Kramer and Midge pass away in the same year?
Well, as far as the Midge and Kramer deal, that was tough. I was running Port Royal that night that happened to Kramer, and I guess they tried to keep it from me, and I didn't really know anything, but I picked up my cell phone. And someone had texted me. So I had to go to the guys and say, hey, yo, what's going on?
Hmm.
And they were like, oh, crap. They didn't want me to know. But we didn't know the extent of everything then. And it's just a shame. I mean, it sucks that it's part of this sport. But we just got to do our best and try to make it not happen. As far as our deal with Jen, that was very scary, having a three-year-old and hearing the word cancer. Everything went through my head. But she was very strong battling it, and that helped me out a lot. And Bill Gallagher, the owner of our car, he told me, let her sit, take care of the family. So that was a big help. You know, I didn't have to worry about losing my ride or anything going through the battle. But she was so tough, and she just had some more reconstruction here Friday. So everything's really looking good with that.
Well, that's great to hear. How do you feel yourself mentally being prepared to come back and race this year with URC?
I feel a lot better. I mean, last year was one of those deals where it showed that there's a lot more in life than racing. If I had a bad night, it was like, okay, well, look what Jen's going through, and I got the Madison now, and it was one of those deals where probably at the races my head wasn't all the way there, worrying about Jen and stuff, and next year is a different story. We're getting ready. We're going to be better prepared. So we'll go into this year and try to get back to being fast each time we hit the track.
What is your overall outlook for this upcoming season, and what are you looking at in terms of URC and anything else in the world of racing?
Well, we're going to probably hit most of the URC races, if not all of them. Then we're going to do some Selins Grove races, and we're going to do some 410 racing. Probably do some Grove races and some other special shows.
Were you surprised when you saw that Selins Grove was going to incorporate the 360s with the 358s on a weekly basis?
No. I mean, I kind of thought that's the way they were headed. You know, they have their biggest race at the end of the year, and it's a 358-360 challenge race, so it kind of would only make sense that they would allow it all the time when their biggest race was a combined race.
You're a guy that's run the 360s for the majority of your life. I mean, you have run the 410s as well, but what are your thoughts on these 358-360 challenge races?
Oh, I like them. I mean, they're bigger paying races, so the competition's pretty good. And I like them. I just like to go racing. You know, I don't get involved in the politics side of things. I think sooner or later it'll all be 360s.
And of your eight URC titles, does one stick out over the other because of the circumstances evolving around that particular championship?
No, not really. I mean, each one has, I can pick something out that's pretty special for each.
Mm-hmm.
So there's not one that kind of sticks out more than the others.
If you do make all the shows, what do you think would be the chances that you could win an unprecedented ninth URC title, and what's it going to take to do that?
Well, I think my chances would be pretty good with the equipment that we have and our record in the past. But to do that, you have to have it starts in the shop. Everything has to be meticulously maintained, and you cannot break, you know, and on the racetrack, you got to be pretty smart at what you're doing and kind of know that's what you're doing, racing for points, that, you know, fifth is better than trying to crash, getting fourth with only a couple to go in the feature. So there's different things you can do if you're running for points, where next year I'm not going to race the season like I am racing for points kind of thing. So I guess we're going to try to run all the races, but if we don't, we don't. And if we don't win it, it's no big deal, you know, type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Just going to go race and see how we do.
Well, the way things are going right now, Kurt, I'm not sure if Mother Nature is going to allow us to have spring until June.
That's the way it's looking.
With all these storms that are coming up the eastern seaboard, it's particularly the big one for Sunday, the nor'easter, which we have not seen in quite some time. So, you know, when you get a chance and you have these long winters, what do you guys do for a living?
I am a screen printer and an artist, so I do all kinds of designing and lettering and printing T-shirts. So we're doing that, and I have the race cars down here, so we're working on that. And with a three-year-old, she keeps me pretty busy.
Has Madison climbed up and gotten in the cockpit yet?
Oh, yeah, she's been in that, and she loves getting in it. All the time.
Oh, that's great.
I think there'll be a quarter midget here soon.
Uh-oh. And mom's okay with that?
Yeah, she's fine with that. I mean, if Madison wants to do it, she says she wants to do it.
Well, that's good.
But if she wants to, she can.
Last question for you, Kurt, before I forget. In all the years that you've raced with the URC, does one win stand out in particular, and is there one race and or track that you have not won at yet that you would like to win at someday?
Well, the win, I guess, would be Syracuse. I won there. That was pretty special, winning on the mile. I also like my Rolling Wheels win, our Rolling Wheels win with the 5G. That was 71 cars, I think, were there. We won that deal on the last corner of the last lap coming for the checkered. Well, I think I did win there, but they took it away from me, and that was Grandview. So technically, I don't have a win at Grandview, but I did win the race.
Yeah, that's a tough place for a sprint car race anyway, but to win there, yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah, we started 12th and took the lead there on the last lap and kind of got together with someone, and they took it from me. But I count it, but URC doesn't count it. So I guess technically I'd like to win at Grandview.
Yeah, not like there's been controversy before in racing, you know?
Yeah, exactly. That's what makes it exciting for the fans.
Yeah, that and some great side-by-side wing-to-wing action at some of the various tracks we have throughout this great country of ours as well. Well, Kurt, we want to thank you so much for taking time out here in the middle of the winter and middle of your preparation to get ready to go and race with the URC and the other races and 410 shows you have for the season. Well, I wish you all the best of luck, and it's great to hear that Jen is doing well, and we wish her continued luck in her battle against breast cancer as well.
Yes, thanks. I appreciate it, and thanks for having me.
Sure thing. Eight-time URC champion Kurt Michael joining us here on the Sprint Car Show. We will take a break and be back with more right after this. Just in time for spring, motorsports publisher Coastal 181 will deliver another great open-wheel book titled The People's Champ, A Racing Life. This autobiography of USAC Triple Crown champion Dave Darlin looks at his racing career from quarter midgets to sprint cars. The People's Champ is sure to be a hit with open-wheel fans about one of the sport's true class acts. To learn more, visit Coastal181.com or call them toll-free at 877-907-8181. Coastal 181, reading for racers. Welcome back to the Sprint Car Show. Special thanks to our guests Lucas Wolf, Steve Sinclair, and Kurt Michael for joining us here on today's broadcast. We'll have another broadcast for you coming up on Tuesday, February the 18th. The Sprint Car Show has been brought to you by Penske Racing Shocks, the competitive advantage of champions, by Coastal181.com, reading for racers, and by the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum, located outside of Turn 2 at the famed Knoxville Raceway. Until next week, thanks for listening, everybody. I'm Sean Wood.
This has been a presentation of the Dirt Track Channel.